Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Phileas Club. This is episode number 13 for the month of May 2009. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club, the show where we talk about world news with people from around the world. My name is Patrick Beja. I'm in France, and with me today is a shorter panel than we usually have, so this is probably going to be a shorter show than we usually do, although I probably shouldn't be to promise something like that because I never actually deliver. The panel is only Turkey. And that's nice because we're going to have a nice little short and sweet show. How are you doing, Turkey?
I'm good. And let's see if you can make this short.
Well, you know, with it usually the longer the show, I mean, the more people we have, the more the show gets out of control. So I'm pretty confident that we can have a shorter version today. But let's see how it goes. And let's get into it straight away. With the first... Oh, by the way, before we get into the show, in case you haven't been listening before, Turkey comes to us straight from Saudi Arabia. I don't know if anyone would not know that, but if they don't, then, well, now they do. First order of business. Before we get into more... sizable stories, we've been hearing that the financial crisis is, well, maybe not over, but at least we're at the bottom of the pit, and the signs are here that things are going to start to get better soon. We've been hearing about this a lot in France. I think in the US they've been discussing it too. Do you think that's the case? Turkey, how do you see it from the Arab world?
And, from the Arab world, we'll know that it ended when you get a job.
You as in me, personally?
Yes, yes.
So you mean the Arab world is looking at me to know how the crisis is going?
Yes, we're keeping track of you.
That's not surprising. But no, seriously.
Well, our world is, I don't know, they're not really keeping that much track on it because...
you're rich anyway, you have too much money, you don't know what to do with it, so...
No, that's not the reason. The reason is that most people here were not affected by the crisis as badly or as much as most countries in the world because our economy was not... linked directly with any of the crisis that's going on.
Well, I remember we discussed it a little bit, but your economy relies on the selling of petrol, of gas.
So well, we're talking about two levels of economy. We have you have the petrol and gas, of course. That's the income that the government gets, and we've had very high prices the last year or two. It went up to 140. So there's an overflow of cash for the government just because of that. So this crisis, as long as it doesn't get too long, it wouldn't really put any much negative effect on our economy from that point of view.
All right. Well, so I guess you're safe for now.
Yeah,
well, you're probably going to be safe because I think the people who think the economy is becoming strong again are... It's a consensus mostly, so... I don't know. Maybe that's the picture I'm getting from France. But our outcome is probably tainted in France, especially because the way our country is structured, we feel less of the effects of the slowing down of the economy, but we also feel less of the starting up again. So I don't know whether we should be happy or not about the whole thing, because when the economy starts again, we're going to have people unhappy about the fact that we're not getting the benefits. So
mentioning economy and France, just remembered, I saw there's a show on Al Arabiya News Network here, and it's part of the show. They have this show they called Mahattat, or which translates to stations, and they cover different simple stories from around the world. And apparently, they specifically talked about Paris and French people in Paris and how they're reacting to the poor economy.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. What did they say?
Well, they interviewed a few people, and apparently people are being more careful about what they're buying, looking around for better prices. I think you have some, I forgot what, supermarket chain that buys the old and overstocked products and resells it at lower prices.
Oh, I haven't heard of that.
But
I think that's pretty much the attitude of everyone, and that's what's been making the economy get worse. People are keeping their money and making sure that that things get better before they spend. So, well, that's the vicious cycle that we've been in. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get out of it soon. Hopefully, you know, the nice weather is coming back. People are getting more happy, and maybe they'll start spending a little.
What nice weather?
Well, okay. Well, for you, it doesn't change much. But for us, we've had like 2 days of sun.
What do you mean it doesn't change
much? 2 days of sun and everyone's out in the parks and having fun already.
We were enjoying 30 and 20 degrees, and now it's 45.
So maybe the economy is going to start to worsen for you now. We'll see. The other thing that's been making the news in France, mostly, is... Well, there hasn't been any huge stories, I would say, but the European election has been making the news because, ironically, people don't care. The amount of people who participate in the European election has always been very low, and people are trying to make the voters aware that the elections are going to happen on June 12th, and trying to get people to vote. And that's a difficult proposition. People don't really care. One of the key issues that we've been discussing, though, when people say that it's an important event, is the fact that some of the parties would like Turkey to become a part of the European Union. And by Turkey, I mean the country, not you.
For a minute, I thought that was going to be part of the Union.
A lot of people don't want Turkey to become a part of the European Union. The thinking behind it being, the two schools of thinking are, if you include it, then you will open your arms to the Arab world and make the European Union a more inclusive organization and... aside from the fact that Turkey has been linked to Europe historically, you would also make it a gesture towards the Arab world. And they think it's important to make that gesture. And the people who are against it think that Turkey has a different culture and a different history. And they think that to be effective, the European Union has to stop at one point, and we can't include anyone, because once we include Turkey, then it opens the door to a slew of other countries that would have a legitimate claim to be part of the Union. So I guess both arguments are valid. And
So what does Turkey have to do with Arabs?
Well, you know, I should say Middle East more than Arabs. But, you know, from the European Union, I mean, from Europe, Turkey is seen definitely as part of the Middle East and not as part of Western Europe. And I think it's a fair point, but what I was interested to know was how you guys in the actual Arab world would see that issue. Do you think Turkey would have a legitimate claim to be part of the EU, or do you see it as part of the Middle East more than the Western Europe that we are part of?
We wouldn't care.
Okay, that's very helpful.
No, it's serious. Turkey is a completely different culture. They speak a different language. They have a different culture. We have nothing related to them.
Really? That's actually a little bit surprising to me. Because
we really don't really care that much. It's
so if we ask you, so do you think it should be part of the EU, you're going to say whatever?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
You can ask anybody here and that's the response. What do I care? Well, they can be the part. They don't want to. They don't want to. It's not going to affect us in any way.
Okay. So have you been covering the European elections or not at all?
Maybe I mention now and then. And when it comes to Turkey, the only thing that people would talk about joining the EU is just because it's an Islamic country. That's the only aspect of the whole thing that people would even look at.
You mean in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, in the Arab world in general.
Okay. So let's talk science fiction for just a second there. If Turkey joins the EU, do you think it would change the way the Arab world looks at the EU? Or would it really not affect? Because here we're talking maybe they want, maybe they don't, and you don't care about that. But if it actually happens...
Well, it's a complicated thing to answer, and really it comes down to who you talk to, because even though Turkey is a Muslim country, it still has a very strict and fundamentalist secular government,
yes,
or system. So in a way, it's Islamic and it's not Islamic. So when it joins, there people will be divided. Some would see it when it joins the EU. You know what? It's the same thing. It separates religion from state. It abuses Muslims. No wonder it joined the EU. Others wouldn't look at it well. It is an Islamic country, so it might have influence on the EU. Things might improve. So it really comes down to who you're talking to and how they look at Turkey.
Mm. And by Turkey, you mean the country and not you. Again, I'm sorry.
I was talking about the bird, not the country.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess it's a little bit disappointing that people don't really care about the EU more. I'm talking about people from the EU. But to be completely honest, I don't. It feels very foreign. And it probably shouldn't, but I'll make sure to go out and vote on June 12th.
And you European people have been doing a great job of doing this whole European Union. Just the fact that we're talking about different cultures, different languages, all uniting under one flag, that's really impressive. We Arabs have been trying to do that for the last 50 or 80 years, and we're still failing. So, and we speak the same language and we share the same culture. So,
well, I agree that it's a really impressive achievement. I mean, it's easy to poo-poo the EU as ineffective or it gets in the way or whatever. You know, there's a lot of people who don't really.
Just like I said, you should just look at it from the fact we're talking about countries that have different cultures, countries that have a different language. Somewhat of a different religion, some of them, and they were able to pass and do some things that countries who share the same language, share the same culture, share the same religion, are not even able to do even 1% of what you were able to do.
Talking about this, Sarkozy, our president in France, wanted to push for the Union for the Mediterranean. And that was, he made a trip to the Middle East a few months back and trying to push for it. And it was pretty well received, I think. But we haven't heard about this since then. Is it moving along? Is there any chance that this is going to happen at some point? Or
As far as I know, there is some kind of union of that effect right now. I don't know whether it's officially a union or is it just a meeting that happens every year of a group of countries, but and it really doesn't for as far as I can say, I really can't tell, because most of these countries, especially France, would concentrate on North African countries like Algeria, Morocco, Mauritania, Tunisia, Libya, and they're kind of a different culture some way and a little far from us, so but keeping track of it is a little difficult unless something really big happens.
I see. Okay, still in the Middle East, before we started the show, when we were preparing, you talked about a story that I didn't really hear about from Israel. And, well, we've been hearing about the colonies issues and things like that, but the one you mentioned was different, and it was about a new law that was proposed and that was voted down. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, well, this law was proposed by the Israel Beitunah party, which is an ultra-nationalist party, the Liberman's party. And basically, during the Israeli National Day, the Arab Israelis don't celebrate the creation of Israel. They actually cry on the downfall of Palestine. So they put out black flags and
so it's the national day of Israel. It's the national
yeah they mourn during that day.
Okay,
the Arab Israelis mourn during that day. Many of them do that, and it's called, and they call it, they don't call it the Israeli National Day, they call it the Nakba, which roughly translated into the disaster.
Okay.
So that day, it's a disaster for them. So apparently the ultra-nationalist Israel Beitina put a law. They want to condemn such acts, and they want to do two things. One, they want all Israelis, and of course they meant by all Israelis, they're really meaning all Arab Israelis, to swear, to take an oath of loyalty to Israel. And anybody who celebrates the Nakba, they want them to end up in jail for, I think, the punishment would be for 3 years. Just for us.
3 years? Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
Wow. If you don't take the oath, whoever you are, you're supposed to end up in jail.
I don't know about the oath part. I'm not sure whether you just end up in jail or you're kicked out of the country. I'm not sure exactly how this. But if you celebrate the Nakba, if you mourn on the national day, you do end up in jail for 3 years.
Okay, so that was the law that was proposed.
That was the law that was proposed. It failed from the government. An Israeli government committee rejected the bill. So it's not officially 100% out of the killed yet.
Okay, but it was rejected. So it might come back.
It was
back,
rejected by a government committee. However, the Knesset or the parliament, the Israeli parliament, might try to revive it and vote on it.
But you were telling me that the only party that voted for it was the party of Lieberman.
In the government. So, in the government.
Oh, okay. So Netanyahu's government.
The government, did not approve of it, rejected it. But so it's still kind of sensitive. Most likely it's going to be thrown out because there was a lot of outrage from some Israelis, from Arabs, from the U.S., from human rights groups, and many people.
But it seems really outrageous to even propose a law like this. And I would think that they didn't really propose it just to, you know, to actually have it pass, but just to, for the sake of proposing something like this, you know, and having some press. Because I would never think
we're talking about an extreme right-wing nationalist party that actually, if they had the choice, they would kick every Arab Israeli from Israel and make it 100% Jewish state.
Right. Well, I guess I wasn't exactly clear. My point was they didn't expect it to pass.
No, it was. If memory serves me right, it did pass the reading in the Knesset.
Okay.
Yeah. So it did kind of pass. That's why it went to the government committee to be studied.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a little bit scary. I guess it provoked outrage in Saudi Arabia.
It let's be honest, it's kind of complicated when it comes to Saudi Arabia. We are talking a country where unless you're Muslim, you're not a citizen. So you can see it's people would see it from two point of views. People who actually think about it think there's nothing wrong of it as long as since we have something similar here in some way.
Oh,
and people who don't think about it, who are who think about it in an emotional way, would see it in a different way. So,
because I, from my point of view, it would have nothing to do with religion or pretty much any opinion. It would just be a human rights issue, and it's a very oppressive kind of law, which would not be an issue of one's religion, but.
Well, it is about religion because its main target is the Arab Israelis, so which are mainly Christian and Muslims.
Of course, my point is it would be an issue whether you know it was about religion or anything else. The idea that you have to swear an oath to the country or you're kicked out would be a little bit iffy, no matter where the law was proposed.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
But I don't agree with but from your point of view, and by you I mean Saudi nationals, you actually have a similar law since you have to be a Muslim to be allowed to live in Saudi Arabia. So
to be a citizen of Saudi Arabia.
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, interesting. I haven't been following the news as closely as I should have in the past few weeks, but I don't think we've heard a lot about this specific law. And that's kind of surprising because we're very, we're very partisan. Well, I shouldn't say partisan, but Israel is a very hot button issue in France also. So I would have thought we heard about it, but maybe it's me who didn't follow enough.
It has been a big story here in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. It's been covered a lot.
What we did hear about, though, is the return of the colonies and colonization in Israel, and pretty much everyone is against it now.
The settlements.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The settlements coming back but it was expected with the change of government, but. I mean, I think every Western government spoke out against it.
Yeah, well, actually, it's really becoming a very delicate situation since Obama clearly opposes it and has been pushing very hard to stop it.
Yes.
So it's kind of starting this problem between the Israel and the U.S. government, and it's really being a very sensitive issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very delicate here in France, too. And I don't think anyone approves of it except for the Israeli government. So, well, we'll see how that unfolds in the coming months. Anything
also,
else?
Also, we have the first French military base outside of France since the days of the colonies.
Which one is that?
They just opened a base in, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this. Yeah, it was in passing, though. It wasn't that big a deal, but...
I'm surprised, not a big of a deal. That's your first base outside France since the colonies.
Yeah, yeah, we did mention it, but I don't think it was a controversy or anything. It's, you know, fine, we're doing it.
It's a big deal here.
Really? Well,
it's a big deal here.
Yeah.
You have to look at it from different angles. So you have that one angle is that we have an official base in an Arab country for a foreign European country. You have also the other point of view where people look at it that this is a challenge against Iran. And then you have the point of view this is a challenge against the U.S., so it's been a big deal. People have been talking about it a lot here.
Well, I don't mean to downplay it. It was obviously a story here, but I don't think it was. We had other issues that overshadowed it, probably. And maybe it's. Do you have another story from the international scene, or do we?
We have in Kuwait. They had their parliamentary elections, and for the first time in history of Kuwait, they elected 4 women into parliament.
Good thing, right?
Yeah. If you consider the Kuwaiti parliament a real thing, it's a huge mess.
So that's interesting, actually, to, again, I'm putting the spotlight on you a little bit, a lot today, but... considering the women's rights in the Arab world and in Saudi Arabia, especially, I'm curious to know how they see it in Saudi Arabia. The fact that Kuwait has 4 women in parliament.
Well, as I said, it always comes down to who you talk to.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's pretty much a given.
Yeah. So there are people who think it's a good thing. It's a start, first step for Kuwait, our turn is going to come someday. Then you have those who say condemn this whole thing.
Right.
Women should not be in parliament, women shouldn't lead, and so on. So it comes down to who you speak to.
What's the stance of the king? Does he express anything on this these issues, or...?
The king is somewhat of a moderate, and he has been pushing to put women in some powerful positions and give them more opportunities. It's a very sensitive move, so he's moving very, very slow, but he's still moving. For example,
Rather modern on this issue, on women's rights issues for a while here on this show, but I understand that I guess my question was, can he afford to be public about his support for these kinds of moves, or would it anger a part of the country too much?
No, it would anger part of the country. That's why he's very sensitive. He talks when he thinks he can talk, when he believes the situation allows it. For example, I think it was 2 weeks ago, the king celebrated the graduation of doctors and nurses that got credentials to work in Saudi, and most of them were Saudi doctors and nurses, and they were male and female. And at the end of the celebration, he took a group photo.
Oh, you broke out a little bit here. He took a group photo?
With all the females.
Oh, okay. And that's controversial?
Of course it's controversial. He's taking a picture, and like with what, I think 100 females, there's no guys, and he's standing in the middle of them.
Oh,
so
that's a
big deal.
Your mic is acting up a little bit. I don't know what's wrong, but you have a little bit of
power. Yeah, I'm hearing something else. I don't know what's wrong.
Strange. Well, to set the frame here, maybe we should explain what we were talking about just before we started the show, which is. We were talking about going out and going to bars and stuff like that, and you told me that in Saudi Arabia, men are not allowed to converse with women, even with the fear that if they do actually have contact, it might lead up to friendship, maybe love, and then maybe sex, and that's of course prohibited outside of marriage. So to prevent that, men are not allowed to speak to women, right?
Not exactly speak to women, socialize with women.
Okay, but if you meet a girl at a cafe...
No, you can't meet a girl at a cafe.
Right, okay. So I guess that sets the tone for... for those things we're talking about with the in politics and the women's right. And I think you have a little bit more to talk about, maybe at the end of the show, about a comment that was made on the blog earlier last month.
Yeah. Two more stories.
Okay.
All right. The first one is the problems in Yemen. For those who don't know Yemen used to be two states, just like Germany. There was a communist state and a non-communist state. And they got unified, I think, in 1994. Then they were tried to separate again, but there was a civil war and they got united again. And right now there's a movement in southern Yemen, the ex-communist state, for separation.
Okay.
So we might be seeing a civil war in Yemen soon.
That's not good.
Nope.
if you didn't guess, I don't have a lot to say about Yemen.
Well, the problem is the southern Yemenis have been abused by the northern Yemenis, who are tribes and who run the government. And they got and there's a higher percentage of unemployment and people living under the being poor and so on in southern Yemen more than the north. So there's an uprising going in there.
Hmm.
And it's really a big major story around in the Arab world, because that would be start a new civil war.
Well, why do you care so much?
For us personally, Yemen is our southern border.
That would make it important.
I would think so.
And the last story you wanted to talk about...
It's about Iran.
Right.
And apparently there's this... for those who haven't heard, on Thursday, last Thursday, a mosque blew up. Apparently a suicide bomber blew himself in that mosque. Apparently he's a Sunni. A suicide bomber. There's we have a minority Sunni population in Iran living mostly on the Gulf shores that are oppressed by the Iranian Shiite government. So this is one of their ultra fundamentalist radical opposition groups, and he blew himself in this mosque. There was a meeting for supporters of Ahmadinejad, the current Iranian president, because right now Iran is getting ready for elections. Presidential elections. So the real story about all of this, which is I'm taking too long to reach, is apparently the bombing happened on Thursday. They caught three people, accused them of helping the suicide bomber, and they executed them on Saturday.
Yeah, that of course it smells of demonstration of strength for the election. I mean, could they really have found them straight away? And
whether they found us or not straight away, it's just not logical to execute them so fast. I'm a big supporter of the swift justice, but catching them on Thursday and finding everything out from them and getting them to court and judging them and execute them on Saturday, I just don't. Keep in mind, Friday there's no court because it's an official weekend.
Okay, but what's the issue if they are caught red-handed and they had like documents and plans of the mosque and we know that they did participate?
They did not issue anything to show that they had anything against them. They just said they confessed.
Okay, I agree. I mean, it's obviously one could assume that it is fabricated, but let's assume that it's not. If they did actually confess, why would you be against the fact, if you're for swift and strong justice, why would you think that one day is worse than three days?
Because I don't believe anybody would have confessed so easily when he knows the punishment would be death.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I actually agree with you, but...
Would you confess when you know the fact that if you confess, you're going to die?
It depends. If Jack Bauer is torturing me, maybe I would confess to anything.
Okay. There's just something so suspicious about this thing. And if you want about something about punishment, Saudi Arabia executed a guy think on Friday, and then they crucified him.
What? Crucified?
Yeah.
Is that a standard punishment in Saudi Arabia?
That's the ultimate punishment.
What did he do?
He worked in a small supermarket, and he got his hands on a small kid, dragged him inside, raped him, a small boy, then choked him to death. And the father of the boy came looking for his son because he was late. He went inside, he saw his son, he tried to stop the guy. The guy killed the father and ran away.
Well, you may be
depressed. And they finally found him. He resisted at arrest. And they finally caught him, and his punishment was get his chop his head off and crucify him in public for a few hours.
Was he mentally ill, or what is that even a concern? I guess not, but
no, mentally ill, they do consider that.
Oh, so he was found not mentally ill, or
yeah.
Okay.
So no, they do consider mentally ill. If he was mentally ill, they might have still beheaded him, but they wouldn't have crucified him.
Well, I'm tempted to say how nice of them, but the story is too horrible to be making jokes.
Just to clarify, crucifixion here doesn't mean we put him on a cross. Crucifixion is they tie the body against like a tree or a piece of wood, and it's for a few hours.
Okay. Well, I guess he doesn't really care. He's dead, but still.
No, I just don't want people would say, well, that's a Christian thing.
Well, crucifixion has become a Christian thing now, but it didn't used to be. So,
but the whole concept of it being a cross, so they don't put him on a cross. So.
Okay. Well, I guess we've transitioned into the local story, so I'll let you keep going. Is there anything else that was wonderful that happened in your beautiful country? Worth of note?
Are you being sarcastic here?
Just a little bit. It seems that every time we talk about something that happened in Saudi Arabia, it's about someone getting crucified or a woman getting stoned to death or... I don't know.
We never stoned a woman here.
I don't know. It's the feeling that we get. Maybe that's the bias I have, even though...
Let me explain something about stoning a woman. Okay. That is part of the Islamic law. It happens maybe in Afghanistan, maybe in the tribal areas of Pakistan. But it doesn't happen here because the Islamic law is very strict on this matter. First of all, you only stone a woman if she has sex and she's married. She's already married, so she's not single.
Okay.
First condition. Second condition, four people who are known to be wise and just have witnessed the sex.
Have witnessed?
Witnessed the sex at the same time. And not only they don't... the witness doesn't mean that they find the man and the woman naked in bed. No, they actually have to see them doing intercourse.
Okay.
So what are the chances that would happen?
Probably slim.
Impossible.
So, okay, I was being a little bit over the top here, but I meant you know, stories about little girls being married to old farts.
Okay, and, since we're talking about that.
Yes, that was sort of my segue into your chance to talk about the comments.
So, apparently, I think it was his name, something, McHaley or something, some guy on your blog. Was commenting about this whole thing for the last show.
Yes, let's remind the people of what story it was exactly.
So the last story was a mother went to court demanding that her 8-year-old daughter be divorced from her 50-year-old husband, who she got married to without the mother or the daughter knowing by her by the girl's father.
Yes.
And the whole deal about the judge throwing the case out and coming back and so on.
So CJ came on the blog and commented on this.
Yeah. And first of all, I really found his comments offensive. First, apparently he's judging everybody, even though he claims he's not judging. But if you read the whole thing, he's judging a religion and a culture and people on the act of one person.
Well, so that's what he's saying. I'm paraphrasing here, but he's saying that a country that allows things like that to happen is as guilty as the guilty incident itself, because the country is allowing this to happen.
Okay, this is where I have the problem. People apparently, when they Europeans, Western people in general, they look at Saudi Arabia and they look at themselves, and they don't know that Saudi Arabia is only 75 years old. It doesn't have a history of a country, an old country like most of Europe and the US. So it's a brand new country. It's just adapting. Actually, we were still a tribal country 50 years ago. So officially, we haven't started to modernize this country. Less than 50 years ago, did Saudi Arabia start modernization. So unless he's going to call and condemn his ancestor, CJ, because I'm sure if we search his ancestors, we'll find a lot of small girls getting married to old men. Because this is a culture thing. The old days, a small girl marrying an old man was no big deal.
So I don't know if they would get, you know, married at, well, maybe 8 years old in some cases for alliances.
Eight,
and yeah.
8 years old, 9 years old, I'm sure of that 100%, and we can go and look through history.
But his point is it's happening today and it shouldn't. And what he's saying is
the point. He's talking about a country that's less than 75 years old. You cannot judge the culture of a country that's 75 years old to a culture of a country that had 300 years to develop.
Or more, because the U.S. actually came from Europe, and they had the history of Europe behind them.
Exactly.
What I had a problem with in his comment was the fact that we had a little back and forth on the blog, and you might want to go check it out yourselves if you're interested. What I had a problem with was the fact that he said that he doesn't judge the whole country or the whole culture. But he actually does, and he takes one incident and condemns a whole religion. It's very, I thought at least it was kind of religious, religiously charged. He was, behind his words, maybe I'm misinterpreting here, but behind his words were the idea that Islam is not a good religion because of this. And what I have a problem with is that you can take one incident in one context and generalize it for anything, anywhere. And I'm sure that you can find incidents in the U.S. about, or in Catholicism, or pretty much anywhere, and condemn
In the U.S., they just caught a man, arrested a guy who's been marrying, had, 20 wives, and he was marrying his own daughters also, and so on. So
yeah, so anyway.
And he was a religious leader.
I think the which is not good. I mean, this example is obviously to be condemned, as is the example in Saudi Arabia that he was talking about. But the what I had a real problem with the generalization, and you should be careful when you judge a whole people on based on one incident. Now, you can be critical of a country and of the policies and the laws and everything like that, but take one extreme and judge everyone by that extreme, and you start getting into a very dangerous territory.
And I agree with you on that. And that's and my second problem with him was him claiming that why nobody came out and said this was wrong and not part of Islam. And here's my question to CJ. CJ, do you speak Arabic and do you live in Saudi Arabia? Have you actually read Saudi newspapers or watched Saudi TV? How do you know nobody stood and said this is wrong and said it should stop in Saudi Arabia. So unless he's relying on CNN, which I doubt would cover every single thing happening in Saudi, or even going to cover and post all the articles written in newspapers, I don't see how he decided that nobody in Saudi Arabia stood against this marriage.
And what you're saying is that people actually did stand against this marriage.
There were people who stood against it. We have a human rights organization here in Saudi Arabia, which is government, a government human rights organization, which completely opposed this and went on the record. And it's demanding that there should be an age, a fixed age for marriage in law. There were a few religious leaders, and there were religious leaders who supported the marriage. There were also religious leaders who came out in public and said, this is wrong, it should stop. We have also writers, newspapers, critics, news anchors on TV, on radio, and people just posting their own personal opinions, whether it's online or on talk shows.
So I guess it's good to clarify this part of the debate too. But I think both points you made are very important. And as I told CJ also, cultural relativism, I hope it's a word in English, cultural relativism, which is the idea that you can excuse things if they happen in a different culture because you say, well, that's not the way they do things there, so, you know, we shouldn't judge it by our standards. I agree that this attitude can be dangerous sometimes, but you shouldn't take it to the extreme, the other extreme either. So,
yeah, you could judge another culture and you can say, well, that's wrong, and you can look at your standards and say this is wrong, but you shouldn't condemn. The condemnation is the wrong thing. No, like, you cannot condemn a culture for what it believes. You can argue with that culture. You can show your point of view. Have a discussion with that culture. Condemning a culture would never help getting your point through, and it will never help to solve that problem that you have with that culture. Because, trust me, most people, when they're condemned, they stick to their guns because they don't like being condemned.
I agree, but that's a different way of approaching the issue. If you're approaching it from a philosophical point of view and thinking, what do you think of this, then maybe you have a philosophical duty to say, I am against it. And if you're approaching it from a practical point of view, when you actually want to achieve things, then maybe you need to speak to people and actually get the dialogue going so that things can change.
No, personally, even on a philosophical, you can say, well, I oppose, I disagree, I think it's wrong. But to go out and you say, I condemn such an act, and when it's an act that's just within that culture, and it's accepted within that culture and within that people, then you are not helping.
No, I agree, but let's take the example of the Taliban's, who, apply a very strict version of the Islamic law and do things like disallowing music or bird singing, or, you know, do the whole burqa for women, and are, well,
where did bird singing? Are you making things now?
No, up? I'm not making it up. That's
there's no such thing as bird singing forbidden, even in Taliban.
Yes, there is. I'm nope. Pretty well. We'll look it up. And there was an event like this a few years ago, and it might have been an isolated event, but I mean, the point is they are very, very strict, and the extremes that they go to inspire me a very clear condemnation. And maybe it's not the same as Saudi Arabia, but in this case, I would understand that you do condemn. I mean, there are some cases where you have to say that is not acceptable.
No, you see, there's a difference between what Taliban has done in Afghanistan, for example, because that I would agree to condemn.
Oh, see, there you go.
No, this is where the difference is. This is where the difference is. We're not talking about culture now or tradition or things. We're talking about a movement that moved in and demanded everybody to abandon what they were doing. It was never against the culture, and they started putting their own rules on it. So that's a completely different situation. It's not like, well, they would lived like that and we're just coming now. No, they were living a different way. Then this group came in and they demanded everything should be changed.
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
it was an oppressive political movement in a way, political slash religious movement.
Yeah, exactly. It's not basically a cultural thing. Culture, people were opening up there. Women used to walk around freely there, and some of them were oppressed, but some of them were moving freely. And then this view came in that they, well, we don't care what they used to live or how they lived. Hmm. We're going to force them to live in a specific way. It was the same thing when it comes to Taliban Afghanistan. You have these, if you remember the story of those two gigantic Buddhist statues that were built inside the mountains. They were there. They were Islamic empires, better Muslims than Taliban, for sure. Even Taliban would confess they were better Muslims because they were closer to the days of the Prophet and different Islamic rules, and nobody even touched them. Yeah. And they allowed even Hindus and Buddhists or Buddhists to go and worship there. And then this movement comes in and said, no, that's wrong. We have to destroy it.
What you're saying is the case is different because they don't have the strength of the tradition and culture that justify their behavior. So
it's a new thought that came and invaded and tried to impose its values. Okay. It's not that thought that is already built into this country or this culture.
I understand.
And they're trying to move away from it slowly.
Okay, I guess we got away a little bit from CJ's comments here, but it was an interesting conversation to have anyway. And I hope that, I don't think we're going to change CJ's point of view on this. We discussed it quite a bit on the blog, and I think he's sticking to his guns. But
Patrick, we're not trying to change anybody's point of view. We just, for me, the whole thing is about having a healthy discussion. And I just had to give my point of view because I really felt offended by his what he wrote. And I felt that he was talking without even knowing, especially the part where he claims nobody in Saudi Arabia came out and said this is wrong and opposed it, because apparently he doesn't live in Saudi Arabia, he doesn't read Arabic, he doesn't read our Saudi newspapers or watch Saudi TV, so I really don't know how he decided nobody in Saudi Arabia opposed it.
Okay, I'll leave it there because we could be talking about this for a long time. Let's keep going in the Saudi Arabia news segment. Do you have anything else, or should we move to a lighter French side of the discussion?
There's a lighter French side?
Yes, you're going to laugh at this one.
We talk about the same people who beheaded 40,000 people?
You always come back to that. It was a long time ago.
So it was okay because it was a long time ago?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying to remember. There's one very hilarious news article. I just don't remember what it was. I had it here, but I shut off my Safari browser because apparently that was the one that was for some reason from time to time taking the processor out and hurting the volume.
Well,
there's one news article I didn't mention, which was big in the Arab world. So I'm just going to cover it quickly.
Yep.
There was a murder a few months ago in Dubai where this famous pop star female artist was murdered. And they went around and it fell down that it's a member of the ruling government in Egypt and a big businessman was behind it. And judgment just came back last week that he was guilty, and his papers were sent to look into whether he get the death penalty.
But wait, what? Why did he do it? You mean he hired an assassin or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
He was in love, and she refused to look at him, and he decided to kill her.
And did they catch the assassin, or...?
Yeah, he was an ex-officer of the Egyptian police who works as a private security officer at a five-star hotel in Cairo.
That's weird and disturbing. Okay.
So that's the biggest, one of the big news that apparently I forgot.
Yeah, we haven't heard about this at all.
Yeah. One big news here in Saudi Arabia, it's not funny, but this is a big news here in locally. We've been having a part of Saudi Arabia, which is about northwest of the holy city of Medina. There's an old volcano there. And for the last few weeks, there were a lot of earthquakes in that area, the biggest reaching 5.4 on the Richter scale. And that entire area has been evacuated by the government, and everybody were put into temporary housing outside that area.
Hmm.
And people are still waiting to see whether that volcano is going to erupt or not. The last time that volcano erupted was about 700 years ago.
And the government is prepared. If you've already evacuated the area,
yep, they evacuated everybody already. So,
wow, I feel like this is the Saudi Arabia special. This episode is like half Saudi Arabia.
We still need to make a special on Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe we should. I'll think about it. Okay, let's move on to my only French story. We have a couple, but I think this one is the one that's going to be make people laugh and cry at the same time. In case you don't know, there's been a big student movement that's been going on for a few months now in France, because the government is proposing reform of the university system in France. Mostly it has to do with universities being more independent, like owning their own buildings and being based more on teachers' achievements and maybe teachers being judged by the students and things like that.
You don't have that already?
No, we don't. It's a very monolithic entity. Universities are very state-like, and they're sort of slow. And the idea behind this being that you can't have... I'm not going to get into it too much, but it's the old way of doing it, and the government is trying to modernize it. And, of course, with the modernization, the concerns of, you know, teachers not being able to do their job properly because they're going to be judged by the students, and there it covers a lot more ground than just this, but it's sort of emblematic of the reform. And the ironic thing is that a lot of heads of universities agree that it's mostly good, but a lot of teachers and students are unhappy with the change, and they've been on strike for a long time. And it's been good and bad at the same time. Some people have been saying that a minority of people have been blocking the access to the universities. The universities have been closed for a good part of the last 3 months or so. And anyway, the point is, now we're getting to the time of the year where you have exams for university students. So you're supposed to take your exams, except to take your exams, you're supposed to have been studying for the past few months. And since they haven't been studying, the people who are on strike are very unhappy now, because they want the exams to be delayed or to be held differently, or, well, they're in a pickle because they can't really take their exams, or if they do take their exams, everyone is going to know that this year is the year that the exams were worth nothing, because, you know, maybe the teachers were more lenient because they didn't study for 3 months or stuff like that. So it's a whole big issue, or it was at least in the past couple of weeks. And I found it a little bit ironic because, you know, you were the guys who wanted to go on strike, and now you're not happy because you actually had the strike. So what exactly did you expect? I was wondering also what you thought of that.
What did they expect?
Okay, so I guess you're practical on that matter. Well, yeah, it's funny.
You're asking for my opinion.
Honestly,
that's exactly what I thought. What did they expect?
It's pretty much what happens in all strike situations, because when workers go on strike, I'm curious how things go. Well, actually, you don't have strikes in Saudi Arabia, but did you know that when workers go on strike in France, the first thing they negotiate to end the strikes is to have all their days of strike paid by their employers? And what? That's 90% of the time it's accepted.
What?
Yes. So I thought that would be a nice tidbit of information for you there.
God, you French people are so spoiled brats.
I saw a study by Forbes that states that France indeed has the highest amount of tax in the world. So that made me happy. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. There are a couple of other stories that came out of France, mostly having to do with a new law that should enhance the security in the country that were...
Remember something about France.
Oh, my God, what are you going to say?
I can't believe you actually passed the three strikes law on the internet.
Yes, that was... I know, don't get me started on this.
I can't believe you actually passed that law.
Okay, so since you're bringing it up, for people who don't know, I guess most of you will already have heard of this, but we have a law now in France that states that there's a governmental / independent body that the copyright holders can appeal to if they think that someone using a certain IP is pirating the material they hold the copyright to, and that governmental body will issue a request to the ISP to first issue a warning to the holder of that IP address, second another warning, and third time for the third offense will have his internet access cut off completely. And the real problem here is that all this happens without the involvement of any legal proceeding. It's not a court judge that issues the order. Nothing of that sort happens. And if you want to appeal the thing, you can, but only once your internet access has been cut off. And the other thing is you're still paying for the internet access while you do that. And if you want to absolve yourself of any wrongdoing or anything, you have the choice to install a software, a sort of a spy software that is yet to be determined or written or anything, that will record everything you do on the internet, and you can send the report to this authority to prove that you didn't do anything wrong. So there's so many wrong things with this that I don't even get me started, but yes, it did pass.
Seriously, Patrick? You French people have to decide whether you want to be socialist or capitalist. Seriously.
Yeah, I guess it is a difficult choice we have to make. But this is...
So this is a very ultra-capitalistic law. In a country where you get free medication, free education, and you pay, what, 12 euros for a month pass to movies?
Well, I would argue that it's not capitalistic. It's protecting the interest of an industry via legislation, which is absolutely not capitalistic.
It is capitalistic when there's no legal thing behind it. Anybody, any company can just go and complain and get you warning.
Maybe, yeah, I guess.
But they don't even need to prove it.
Well, it's the government protecting the companies, which is...
Yeah, but the company sends their request and they don't even need to prove anything.
Yeah, which is...
They just send, this IP is stealing, and that's it.
I agree. It's a big... But now it's passed, and the thing in the end is that it's
people
not...
People are getting closer and closer to becoming like Saudi Arabia, apparently. So I wonder whether we should move forward, because apparently everybody else in the West is moving backwards. So why bother?
Well, you know, within a few years, this kind of thing is not going to matter anyway, because these dying business models are not going to survive.
And isn't that law also going against a European law?
Absolutely, yeah. The European Parliament, if I'm not mistaken, voted a law a couple of weeks before we did vote this one. They voted a law that you cannot cut off the internet access of any citizen without legal proceedings. And
yeah, because
so,
basically they labeled it as a utility.
Yes,
not a luxury.
Yeah, which is so obvious that, you know, I used to joke that you could... they use electricity to fire up that computer that they pirated with. Why not cut the electricity also? And
don't give them any ideas, man. Come on.
Anyway, there are similar laws being discussed in different countries, and so it might be coming to other countries soon. I know that a thing like that was being discussed in New Zealand, maybe in Australia, and even in the US. So, yeah, we gave you pretty cool ideas.
The US will never pass.
Oh, you never know. The lobbies are pretty strong.
Not the version that you have. It might pass, but it has to be through legal things. But without even going through court, I doubt it will ever pass in the US.
All right, let's move on to something else. Let's speak very briefly about this law that was proposed in France, which is the LOPSI. And the reason I'm talking about it is because a lot of bloggers in France are talking about it in the suit of this three strikes law, and they're saying that it's even worse. And the part of the law that is that they are taking issue with is the part that allows the police to bug computers for suspects of illegal activities, the same way that the police has the right to bug, let's say, an apartment or a phone line or something like that. And I don't really understand what the outrage is, because I think the police should be allowed, you know, should have the tools to do
police they
work.
Have to get the permission from a court first, or yes. They can just do it whenever they feel like it?
No, they have to get permission from a court, which is, of course, one thing that I... Yeah, exactly. That was my exact... I mean, the reason why I had a problem with this three strikes law was it was happening outside of the legal system. And if... You know, this LOPSI 2 law is actually has, you know, some balance, and they actually have to prove their case to a judge, then I don't have an issue with it. So that was the other thing. All right, you know what? We're nearing on an hour here, so let's move to the conclusion of the show. And I have a comment that I want to talk about also, and that comment was sent to me via email by Vincent. He referred to a comment I made on the latest show, on the show before this one, about confusing the Christian right and the Catholic right. I said that the Christian right... should look at the Pope as the head of the church, and that it would be, hypocritical of them to disregard the comments of the Pope that the Pope would make and pick and choose what the Pope would say, because in effect the Pope was the head of the church. And he pointed out very clearly that that Catholicism is a denomination of the Christian faith, and there are many different denominations that do not, in fact, consider the Pope as head of their denomination. And he said that he was part of one of those denominations. So I agree with what he's saying. Maybe I was misspeaking when I was doing this generalization, but the point that I was making was the fact that a lot of people were choosing what they wanted to believe in their faith. You see a lot of people who decide, well, I don't really like the idea of hell, so I'm going to decide that this doesn't exist. It was in that vein that my comment was made. So maybe it wasn't completely accurate in the way that I phrased it. My idea was that it was somewhat hypocritical of the people to pick and choose what they wanted out of their faith. And I also responded to him by saying that it was sort of weird of me to say that, because in a sense, not being hypocritical and taking your faith very literally might lead to religious extremism. But I'm not going to go farther than that.
So basically, you're calling yourself a hypocrite.
Myself? How am I calling myself a hypocrite?
You're complaining that people don't follow the religion right, while at the same time you want them to question their religion and not follow it right?
Well, I'm not complaining.
I got you on this one.
No, I'm not complaining that they're not following it right. I'm just pointing out the fact that if you want to choose what you believe in and what you don't believe in, it's a little bit hypocritical.
Just forget them. The Catholic Church is too busy having sex with boys.
Ah, what did you get me into? We're going to get 20 more comments from people like CJ who want to say things about Saudi Arabia and Islam.
Dude, I'm trying my best to get your blog busy. I want you to get loads of comments on that page. You have to be controversial and say something stupid or idiotic or crazy.
You know what? I think that the powers that be are unhappy with you because your sound just went right back to that huge static thing that pollutes the sound.
What powers?
I can't hear you anymore, man.
I'm gonna
hang up and call you again. I'm gonna hang up. Okay,
well,
that's
at least
better.
This time it wasn't from me. I'm sure of that.
All right. Well, you know what? I think that's the end of the show. Unless you have something else, I think we can close it up here.
Yeah. There says, I'm 32. I'm single. I'm in Saudi Arabia. So any girls interested, just see me.
But you're gonna have the religious police on your ass. I'll make sure to transmit the emails to you. And if you want to express your interest in this wonderful young man that Turkey is, you can send an email to phileas@frenchspin.com. You can also go to the blog. The blog is thephileasclub.com, and you will be redirected and you can leave comments and things like that. And you can follow Mr. Turkey on Twitter at Saudi. Twitter.com/Saudi is where you can find all the interesting things he talks about all day long. You can
Hey, we have a tweet up this Thursday in Riyadh.
Right, you've been organizing these tweet ups. That's the second one, right?
Yeah, this is the second one.
How many people were at the first one?
I believe there were about 24 men.
Wow,
and
that's
two women.
Cool. Two women? What?
Yeah.
Is that allowed?
No, we were segregated. So,
oh, okay.
Women were in the family section. We were in the single section. Unfortunately, we cannot mix. I prefer it mixed.
Well, maybe when you visit me in Paris, we can have something like that.
Yeah, we should.
All right. So twitter.com/Saudi if you want to participate in the next tweet up. twitter.com/notpatrick if you want to follow me. And I think that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, folks, and we will talk to you soon.